Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I'm Douglas Impoga, and this evening we'll talk about the Ebola crisis in West Africa. And with us tonight is my colleague, Paul Ndiho. Paul, once again, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me again.
You're welcome, and I also have another colleague, Patrick Deya. Patrick, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for the invite.
We're also joined by Mike Adekunle, also known as Mike Magic. Mike is a media practitioner from Nigeria. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's really a pleasure to be here.
You're welcome. And Mike is currently living now. He's currently in the U.S. And gentlemen, once again, welcome to the program. As I said, we're going to talk about the Ebola crisis in West Africa. It's been now a couple of months since the thing started in those three countries, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea. Let me start with Mike. It doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon.
Yeah, unfortunately. I wonder if it's going to get worse before it gets better. Mm-hmm. It's quite simply because the countries, the three that you mentioned, the infrastructure and the know-how is just not there. But now, I think things are looking up because the international community is taking it a little bit more seriously. Mm. Hopefully, there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
I see. Patrick, you think, as Mike says, it may go away soon?
Everybody is aware of it. I think it's all hands on deck now. Mm-hmm. There's enough information out there. But what should be a very great concern is future outbreaks like this. Mm. They've happened before. Mm. But if there's no, the reason why I think it's really spread is fundamentally because there's not enough know-how at the lowest bottom rural areas on how to deal, or the infrastructure, as Mike says, is not good. There's very little know-how on how to deal with emergency, and therefore it takes time before there's a reaction to it.
Yeah, but Paul, there was a case reported in Senegal. There are some cases reported in Nigeria. Those two countries seem to have contained it.
Absolutely. When you look at what Mike has said earlier, he talked about the fact that in Nigeria, for instance, there is infrastructure there. In Senegal, there is infrastructure there. So I think it came down to the basics again. If you have the right infrastructure in place, if the people are conscious of what's going on around them, I think it's easier to contain. We've had situations of Ebola in East Africa, in Uganda and Congo. It was contained within the shortest time. But I think what I think was the fundamental cause of this widespread was the denial. We have to look at it from the perspective of some of these countries not wanting to be labeled as Ebola countries. That's where they stopped denying. The presidents came on air, claiming that they didn't have Ebola in their countries. So I think maybe that played into this whole thing.
Mm. Yeah. Gentlemen, I throw it around. What do you think about that denial issue? Because we remember at the start of all this, the Sierra Leone government kept denying, even despite the facts from the WHO that there were cases of Ebola. And now, just been listening to the president of Liberia, she's disputing the figures that the WHO is projecting, that the cases may increase before they go down.
I think it comes maybe from a place of not wanting to have a bad name for the country, which I think is very, very misplaced. I think there's a fear of what are the impacts, which definitely part of it is economic impact, people fearing coming into the country, and therefore, it has some negative on the country's performance. I think that's a very big driving factor.
To what extent, Mike and Dina go around the table, is culture a factor in all this?
I mean, culture is a big factor because the way this virus is spread goes against a lot of the natural cultural practices that people have. We like to bury our dead in a way, something, we wash the bodies first and there's fanfare. Sometimes the bodies are kept for a long time before the funeral actually takes place. And if somebody died from Ebola, the body is still very, very highly infectious, and so it could spread that way. But back slightly, I just wanted to go back to that denial thing. It's not just it's silly because it is about image, people worrying about the image the country has. But at the end of the day, it just comes back because this is reality. You cannot deny it and expect it to go away. It's still there. And in the end, you just end up looking silly, even more silly than if you had accepted and admitted it from the beginning. Yeah, so, yeah, the cultural thing is definitely a problem because it goes against what we do naturally, but we have to sometimes break culture in order to survive, you know. And this is something that I guess more education and enlightenment will help solve.
Talking of education, enlightenment, and sensitization, do you think there have been enough of that? Because what some of the governments they have resorted to do is lockdowns, using the military to restrain people. Wouldn't it have been better for, some people have said to have been better, just put the information out there and the people understand?
I think there was a failure in terms of communicating the message early enough. Most countries did not take responsibility in the first place. Some decided to play politics at the expense of the people who are dying. So I think the issue of sensitization obviously played a big role. If these governments would have come up and, instead of playing politics, try to do damage control, that it was here, and maybe just went ahead, put out some flyers, came up with some commercials and what on radio and TV, I think maybe it could have helped in a way. That's my guess. But short of that, there are other ways. They could have gone public and asked for international help, like they eventually did. But those things did not happen when they needed to happen.
Did the lockdowns help?
I don't know. You know, there's everywhere, sometimes there needs to be a quarantine, you know, to help, you know, maybe confine that within a certain locality so that it doesn't spread. So there could be a case made for the lockdown, you know, considering that they're not, you know, there's not a very good system already in place. So I think the larger issue is that should there now be a systematic thinking of how to put systems in place to help to mitigate this later on, the information, getting information to the to the lowest level of the villages, providing some expert the nurses or medical people at the very smallest of the village. I think those are the long term. There should be a plan long term, because all this time there has been reactionary. There should be a proactive way of looking at things in the long term.
And you see, some people have pointed out that in the cases we referred to for Ebola was in Africa, it took place in rural areas, so it was maybe easy to contain. But the case of Liberia, Mike, it's in the capital, and the 30% of Liberians live in Monrovia, so that must be tough to contain.
Yeah, but I still feel containing it, the lockdown, the way, especially the way it was implemented, I think was really wrong. And I think the word I would use there was the panic. They used the panic button and just decided to deploy soldiers. Without that information, it doesn't work.
It doesn't quite
People
work.
Will be afraid. And I mean, what if I see soldiers coming in all of a sudden and saying you can't move and trying to confine you, you would panic and your instinct is to run and to flee. This is a country that was devastated by civil war, you know, for many years. You know, you don't know what's going to happen, and it changes just like that. So the way the lockdown was implemented, obviously wrong. There's a lack of respect for human beings. You have to communicate, and like you say, it's in, yes, it is in the capital, Monrovia. This densely populated. So even implementing that lockdown by force is not even going to be that easy. People will slip through the cracks and run. And plus, you have given them a reason to run now. Mm. And so they will run more desperately, including the ones who you are trying to actually lock down, the sick ones. And then it goes to somewhere else, you know. But with the right communication, if it's done in the right way, and people will understand that, okay, it's better I stay. It's better if I stay for my own good and for the good of the people I love. You know, it's about communication. I don't think it was communicated right. And for example, in Nigeria, where there was communication at some point, even at that, we had a few people trying to slip out of the net, and the whole public saying, why would you do that? Why would you run away when you're under quarantine? Are you trying to... But because of the awareness, the public was able to be an outcry. But if there was no outcry, if there was no awareness, then more people would just run away because of fear of what is not known, you know. So at the end of the day, yes, I think the fact that it happened in Monrovia, in the capital, was harder, because it's also harder to track people. If it was just in a village, villages are smaller.
Yes.
You would know that, okay, is this family, is this person? But in the city, people come and go. So I guess it was harder. But the key fundamental issue, I think, is still boils down to the communication and the way the matter was handled.
Yes, and there are those who are analysts who have pointed out that despite all the protestations, all the claims by the leadership in those countries, okay, those leaders should be looking inward, because taking an issue of medical personnel, health workers, they are poorly paid and few. So it gets difficult for those poorly paid, poorly motivated health workers to put their lives on the line.
To sacrifice.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think it's a combination of so many things. When you talk about a remuneration in terms of how much they're paid, these guys really don't make any money. Mm. So they are literally putting their lives on the line. And but going back to the point Mike just made, I think it was a wrong policy to use the military on the streets, because naturally people are afraid of the military. There was a case in Liberia where people raided one of these quarantine centers and they took the bodies out.
And they looted the mattresses.
Yes.
And blankets.
So you can imagine whoever came in contact with those people probably ended up dying, or is one of those people who are now being watched. So I think. Something needed to happen for the doctors. I don't think the doctors had enough information on them. The nurses who are the responders, the first responders. I don't think they had enough information. To this day, maybe with the help of the international community, they have been able to get around, do certain things. But I also wanted to bring in the point of the African Union. For the first time, I was proud of the African Union. I usually criticize them, but they were one of the first people who said, we need to figure out how to contain this. They sent in teams. And to this day, they are still sending in teams of expatriates from within, from other regions.
Yeah.
I think they got some people from Uganda,
like
from Congo.
Ugandan doctor died.
Yes. Who knew how to deal with this kind of thing? So there was, if that had been done maybe sooner, not later, maybe we would not be having this kind of crisis.
Yeah, I differ a little bit in thought process, because the idea of quarantine, I think, works in so many other areas. I think what we can question is how it was implemented. Mm-hmm. The implementation of it was wrong, I think, because there was no information first, before the soldiers were brought in. I think, and again, strategically, one has to look at what do you want to do in order to contain this. Maybe restrict people movement, because movement is one way to spread it all over the place. But as both Paul and Mike says, the military caused a panic, but that would have been avoided if there was some advance
communication
that we are doing this. It's not a military action, but it's an action that would help this thing not spread. So I think the information part of it is wrong.
Okay, now hold your thought, gentlemen. We're going to take a short break and shall continue our discussion of the Ebola crisis in West Africa after this very brief break.
African Music Mix.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African Music Mix on the Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African Music Mix plays only the best. Tune in from 0 to 300 hours UTC and from 11 to 1300 hours UTC every single day on the Voice of America.
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America series here in Washington. Our topic tonight, the Ebola crisis in West Africa. Our panelists are my colleagues, Paul Undiho and Patrick Dare, and we also have Mike Adekunle, also known as Mike Magic. Mike is a media practitioner from Nigeria, currently in the US, and I'm your host Douglas Impuga here in Studio 9. Before I proceed, I wanted Mike to finish a thought. You had something you wanted to jump in with.
Yeah, we've been talking about the way the quarantine, in quotes, or the using the military to cordon off a whole village, and to be honest, it was terror, and how we thought it was done in a panic way. The way it was deployed was wrong. But beyond the way it was deployed, the fact that the lack of communication continued even after the military was deployed. These people who were cordoned off had no means of knowing what was to happen to them, how long this was going to go on, how were they going to be provided for? Was there any plan? And in fact, the truth is, I don't think there was. These people were going to have to eat whatever they had with them. They couldn't go out to go and buy food because they were not allowed to move. And at the same time, the soldiers were terrorizing them because they were using force. They didn't want to, in defense of the soldiers, they would say they didn't want it to get out of hand, and you have to use a firm hand the way we tend to do back home. But that only made more panic. It was panic leading to more panic. And eventually, when people have had enough, it leads to the case where you mentioned people running to a center and breaking it out of frustration and looting, or not knowing that they are looting the very thing that is going to cause more people to die.
Gentlemen, this week there was a case reported of Ebola in the United States, and somebody traveled from Liberia. But Paul mentioned the AU coming in and trying to help. But then there was an issue where many African countries actually had travel bans from these countries. You remember Kenya Airways was among a number of regional airlines which cancelled flights to Ebola-hit nations at the height of the outbreak. Air Cote d'Ivoire, Nigeria, Arik Air, Togo's Askar Airlines, British Airways, Emirates, Kenya Airways, all these cancelled flights to those areas. Was that a good thing, you think?
I mean, it's a precautionary measure. First of all, with... At the rate at which Ebola is spreading so fast, you cannot really contain it if, let's say, somebody gets on a plane and comes to your country.
Yeah.
So I think it was, in my view, it was right. Some of these countries made the right decision not to allow flights coming from these countries, because at that point, people were trying to flee actually those countries to go to different countries. So you can imagine if that had not happened, what would be talking about. I think it could be as far as South Africa, everywhere. But I think that was necessary. But on the other hand, I also think that maybe they overreacted. Some of these airlines overreacted, because when you look at what they have done to these economies, they have really devastated these economies. There's no business going on. Some of these countries thrive on tourism, thrive on people just coming to, you know, to stay in their hotels. So you can imagine for the last 3 months, nothing. No flight, nothing coming. They rely on imports and
flights
exports.
Flights have become very expensive.
Yes. So it's...
What do you think about that?
I think they took appropriate action, you know, for... First and foremost, the airlines have the fiduciary responsibility to protect their
passengers.
I think that is something that they are responsible for. Second, it is something that I think was a good move to prevent this spreading.
Mm.
With the case of this gentleman that is now in Texas, nobody knew that that he had the virus. Now imagine that kind of person going to Kenya, Uganda, and yet the medical system there is not as sophisticated as this person now in the U.S. that being able to be contained.
Mm.
You can imagine that kind of situation. So in my books, I think the airlines made the right call.
Mike, you agree?
I actually do not agree, to be honest. I beg to differ. And the only reason I can say that is because I've been listening so much to like the CDC, what they've been saying about how you only can spread the virus when you're showing symptoms. So I think the most important thing is screening. If somebody has a fever, you don't let them travel. But whenever somebody comes from a country who, you know, we're human beings. People have to move around, like you mentioned about the economy and all that. And it's going to be so unfair to many people who don't have the virus, who legitimately need to travel. You know, life needs to go on. And then you're going to deny people the chance to go and see their family and do their business because of this. I think it's panic. You know, I think it's overboard. You have to be diligent in the screening process is what I think.
Mm.
And the moment somebody who has come from a region like this young man, the moment he felt he was sick, there was actually a lapse over here as well.
Mm.
Because he told them, hey, I'm coming from Liberia.
And they let him go.
And they sent him home the first time. And he had a fever.
Mm.
You don't do that. He didn't have the symptoms when he was coming, so he was not contagious. He was not a danger to the people on the aircrafts with him.
Mm.
He was not a danger to anybody until the symptoms came out, which happened when he was here. And that's the same thing that would happen in other places. The only argument we can make is that in some countries, like you mentioned, is that we don't have the infrastructure like they do over here.
Mm.
So when somebody shows those symptoms... But now, I think that's not even an excuse anymore because now with the education, people would know this man needs to be quarantined,
mm.
you know. And I think that's what should happen.
Mm.
More screening, but not this cancellation of flights.
Ideally, you know, if there's good infrastructure, good health
mm.
systems
mm.
and whatnot, this should not happen.
Mm.
But that's the ideal. But we don't live in an ideal world. We live in a reality where this kind of thing happens. This gentleman gets let in the planes. He does not, at that point, he does not, indicate any symptoms.
Mm.
But at the point that they're now indicating the symptoms and they're already in a different country, they're already integrated
mm.
with the people, they have had free movement. I think it's too late. Here, they're able to capture it,
mm.
even though there was some mistakes done, but the moment that was clarified,
mm.
there is an immediate action and there is facilities to actually take care of it.
Mm.
In but a country then, like Kenya, Uganda,
but then
you do not have that.
Many people have argued that this is the crux of the whole point. The whole problem. Many African countries, the health infrastructure is so poor,
yes.
almost non-existent.
Sure.
Ebola, of course, is a very dangerous disease and has killed almost close to 3,000 people.
Yeah.
There are millions dying of malaria today, 2014. People in Africa dying of malaria. Why can't somebody, international community or anybody else, lean on these governments to invest into the health infrastructure in those countries?
But then nobody needs to lean on this government. They know what they need to do. It's
I
just
don't think
the will.
So, because if they knew, they would have done something.
There's no will. These are people. There's no willpower. They don't have the will to do anything. There are people within, given responsibilities who are medical people, who are professors and what. They have the knowledge. It's just the willpower to do it.
I think we're going and we can have a discussion on that for
sure.
Forever we talk
mm.
about that, but I think we are underestimating
mm.
what we can do concerning Ebola. You don't need to have the greatest infrastructure in the world to quarantine a person. Mm. Somebody that has fever, showing signs of fever, everybody, you know, knows not to have contact with this person because he's coming from an Ebola region. Mm. I don't believe that if someone landed in Nairobi and he's coming from Liberia or even Nigeria or Sierra Leone, anywhere, and he a day or two later he says he has a fever, he goes to the hospital, I don't believe that they cannot know to quarantine this person. It's a question of disinfecting the room and wearing gloves and just treating him with, you know, baby hands. But they can do that. I don't think that you need to have the CDC of you know, all the hazmat. It's good to have it, but I think we are underestimating the capacity with the right knowledge. And that is why knowledge is so key. Now I believe people can handle it. I don't think it's so much to say that in any country in Africa, especially in the capitals of our countries, that they will not be able to quarantine somebody who is showing symptoms of a fever.
So primarily it's knowledge.
Yeah, in fact, I was talking to a doctor like 2 days ago. He's a Ugandan doctor who happened to have been part of the team that was fighting Ebola in Uganda a couple years ago. So he was telling me that the one thing that they didn't take for granted was if they identified you as an Ebola person, they took whatever they did whatever they had to do to make sure that you are not a victim or you don't die of Ebola. So they basically would isolate you, do all sorts of things. And the most important thing was to make sure that whoever was dealing with these cases had on the right gear.
That's a Ugandan.
Unfortunately, in some of these countries, they didn't even have the gloves. They didn't have any of these.
Yes, because
elemental, basic things.
Yeah, because it comes down to our priorities, really. I don't think our governments have done much in investing in that kind of equipment, that kind of gear. But that shouldn't be an excuse. I think we, as Africans, I think there are enough resources on the ground. What is lacking is just how to send out that information. The doctors are there, knowledgeable about how to treat Ebola. I think we have the right nurses on the ground, but the difference is, I think where the problem is, there is no communication. People don't know what, because we keep on hearing this is a different strain of Ebola. We keep on hearing all sorts of things. I think it comes down to people getting the right information, because the information out there is confusing.
And people panic.
And some of them, where they took up months denying they didn't have it, then people even thought it was witchcraft. Others thought it was, all sorts of conspiracy theories flying around the countries. That didn't help much either.
Yeah, even when you look at the reports that are being sent out by World Health Organization, CDC, all the other health experts, it's almost, they're not consistent on what they're saying. Everybody is just saying, you know, so I think that's where the problem is. People are confused. They don't know, because most people are not educated enough to discern from what they're telling them.
Yeah,
you know,
that's why they ought to be educated, because education helps. So
even here, I think the media coverage has changed, especially since this young man who came from Liberia, you know, has Ebola here. People are. I've seen an effort to explain to people that
you cannot. Some of them were scared.
People were scared. Yeah. People were the same thing. It's a new human reaction to panic.
All right, Mike, you have the last word. We have run out of time. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Mike Adekunle, also known as Mike Magic, a media practitioner from Nigeria. Paul Ndiho, gentlemen, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Our producer has been Jackson Mvunganyi, and our engineer tonight, as usual, was Michael Dubinsky. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. By the way, in case you missed any part of this program, just go to our main website at www.vionews.com, click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable, and you can listen to it again. Once again, thanks so much for tuning in. I'm your host, Douglas Mpoga, in Washington, wishing you all the best.
Mm-hmm.